Eureka! You found us! Welcome to the Check Out California Radio Show, your key to California hospitality. Hosted by Rad Gantos, principal of Rad Gantos & Associates, a hospitality and commercial real estate design firm, and Craig Sullivan, executive vice president of ParkWest GC, a hospitality and commercial real estate general contractor. Check Out California is focused on our state's hospitality, travel, and tourism markets, and on the large part they play in California's vibrant and innovative economic diversity and unique quality of life. Now, here are your hosts, Rad Gantos and Craig Sullivan.
Good afternoon. I'm Craig Sullivan.
And I'm Rod Gantos.
This is Check Out California. Welcome to today's show. We've got a family member of mine, Danny Gavert, Senior Vice President, Hunter Hotel Advisors, in the studio with us today. Danny and I go back some 18-plus years.
Yes.
When he was a rookie. Danny, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I appreciate the opportunity. It's always great to see your smiling face, Craig.
So how does it feel knowing this guy for 18 years?
I think it's more important, how does it make me feel thinking how I was 18 or 19 years ago? Oh, my God. When I first met Craig...
You're right out of Pepperdine.
Still in Pepperdine, actually. I was 20 years old and starting in the hotel business and trying to learn the ropes. And the joke that we've said to friends for many, many years is I basically grabbed onto his loop in his pants and just followed
belt
him wherever
loop.
He belt loop and followed him wherever he went.
That's a visual I didn't really need today. But, okay. You guys, maybe you guys can, like, you know, enact that or something after the show.
I need to do a wide shot. I don't think we have the camera with for that.
So that's amazing. So did you go to Pepperdine with that focus on hospitality in mind?
Not at all. Actually, I went to Pepperdine wanting to pursue being a doctor, and then I realized very quickly that I'm not very scholastically intelligent, so switched over to business. And
wow.
And wound up in the hotel
business. I didn't see that one coming.
There we go.
And wound it up at a small motel brokerage shop.
You were going for a hospital and ended up in hospitality.
That's a good way of looking at it, actually. I haven't thought about it
that way.
Two
things in common, people in beds.
Yeah, people in beds. actually, I think we keep them in one more longer than the other these days, right?
Sometimes,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Danny, tell us about Hunter Hotels. You know, this is a national firm that you joined a number of years ago. You opened up an office for Hunter out here in Los Angeles. So let's tell the audience about Hunter and yourself, background-wise.
Yeah, definitely. So I've been in the hospitality brokerage business for almost 19 years. Yeah. I joined on with Hunter in 2010. The company itself started in Atlanta back in 1978. And over, I would say, the last 10 or so years, we've grown the company to be a national platform. Again, I've been there for about 8-9 years, and since 2011, my office alone, we've closed to date 95 hotels since 2011.
Wow.
A little over one a month. Last year, our company was ranked second for select service transactions with regards to property value.
Nationally. What a... congratulations.
That's
all I can say. You stumped the band. I'm speechless. So.
Yeah, and we're number three across all full service, select service, et cetera, in terms of volume sales from all brokerage platforms across the nation. So we're staying busy.
That's amazing.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, you've got a great team there. It's a family shop. It's got a lot of, you know, values that, frankly, you just don't see in corporate America.
No.
And I think that's got to be very appealing for you as an associate to be there.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. One of the major reasons why I enjoyed when I focused on joining this firm was because they were really focused on family values and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say sometimes, quoting Office Space, I don't want my time to be focused on filling out TPS reports.
Right.
I prefer my time spent pursuing opportunities that benefit everybody.
Right.
And the other thing I like is that at Hunter, it really is a family environment, open door policy. We all know what everyone's working on. We all work together. And that's so important in my mind, is to have everyone on board, yep, using everyone's available resources and not having a closed door policy. So we all know who's talking to who and what they're saying. And it just helps us help our clients, which in the end helps us.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a tremendous thing.
Well, it's fascinating how that is not a common practice.
It is, because everyone's looking for theirs. I think the big key word I see is mine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're of the mindset, let's bring in the dollars and figure out where they go afterwards. And everyone's kind of drinking the Kool-Aid, as they say, and we all believe in it. And thank God, so far, it's been a great ride.
That's fabulous. Yeah, no, and I just took a minute because again, we sometimes just gloss over that. And for somebody like you, you said it, you joined that organization because... Mm-hmm. of that.
Very important to me. An example that I use, there's a lot of them, but I had a client based out here, a Southern Korean company that had a hotel in Connecticut, a 17-story older hotel, and it was a conversion opportunity. They wanted me to help them sell it. It's Hartford, Connecticut is the location, just too far away for me, and it just wasn't going to get the attention I felt the asset deserved.
Right.
At that time, I brought in my DC office, our Atlanta office, and we all worked together and got it done, and everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Rather than holding it all for myself,
opening
it up. Mm-hmm. And it was incredibly beneficial for all.
There you
fantastic.
Go. Now, Hunter also launched a conference 20 years ago?
26 years ago, approximately.
Wow, it's been that long.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's become one of the must-go-to conferences in the nation. It started out being a small regional, and now it's well beyond that. It was one day, and now it's multi-day. You've got all of the hotel media there. You've got all the brands there. You've got, 2,200 people attended?
Soon. I mean, we pretty much are at max capacity for the largest hotel in Atlanta, the Marquee.
Yeah.
I believe last year we had 1,660.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just in the last 8 years, that's grown substantially.
Congratulations
well.
To Bob Hunter and the rest of the team at Hunter Hotels.
What's the differentiator for that, Danny, as far as, I mean, there's a lot of conferences in the industry. What's made that such a successful?
That's an interesting statement. I think it's fun to look back at how the conference actually was originated. And sorry, Bob, if you're listening and this is an open knowledge. But I would say 30 years ago, he was at NYU and he started a hotel brokerage company in Atlanta. And he raised his hand in a finance panel and they were talking about large deals, 25 million plus. And he back then. And he said, what about financing for deals and clients that are looking to sell or buy hotels under $25 million? And my recollection of the story was that he was kind of shunned, if you will, looked like, who is this gentleman? And so that, I believe, was part of the catalyst that gave him the fire he needed to start the conference. And, you know, it's his baby. I mean, it's a great conference.
Being shunned is a very good incentivizer. Sometimes.
Yeah, it can be. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's focused, I would say, more on the select service owners, not necessarily operators, because our sponsors are Apple and it goes down the list, but more select service focused.
But it's a great conference. And, you know, I got to tell you, it was part of the inspiration for why I launched Click. And, you know, Brad's heard the story a million times. And I think probably 750,000 times that, you know, I came away from one of the conferences one year and said, this is ridiculous that California doesn't have its own conference.
Yep.
And I finally put my money where my mouth is, and we launched it. You know, we're getting ready for Click 3 March of next year, and, you know, we're growing. And it was the same thing. You know, it was, you know, we need this. We've got a ownership base, a brokerage base, a lending base, insurance company, designers, architects, on and on and on. Third-party professionals, and there was nothing for California.
Right.
And at the time, we were the sixth largest global economy. We're now the fifth.
Right.
And, you know, we've got some 470-plus hotels supposedly in the pipeline just for Southern California.
You know, and it's fascinating because, you know, we talk about this in terms of, you know, an industry that is reinventing itself constantly, all right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of assets, including venue space.
Mm-hmm.
That has gone through this riding high and then falling out of favor and then being sort of underperforming or not big enough. And, you know, now intimacy is key for a certain market. Mm-hmm. Focused conferences are key versus overarching everything, including the kitchen sink kind of conferences, right? And the longer you are in the industry, I think you become more selective in where you spend your time and energy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those venues are now having a resurgence, or almost a phoenix rising from the flames, and they're in markets that are opportune markets again. Mm-hmm. Be they properties that we're talking about being repositioned or adaptively reused, or venue spaces that have gone out of favor for a while and now they're being picked up and they're great on the numbers side and they're still in desirable locations. They're just now being, gentrified, let's say, mm-hmm. or brought back out, you know, of sort of being in disrepair for a while. It's funny. It's almost come up across that kind of situation, whether it's a property or a venue space, almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, I agree.
These days.
I agree. Hey, Danny, closing 1 month, one deal a month, since what, 2011?
Yeah.
Okay. That phenomenal. Congratulations, brother. I'm very proud of you.
Yes.
Where is pricing today? Where is it going in the next 12 to 24 months?
Well, starting with where pricing is today, if you look at the numbers just from a valuation standpoint, it seems as if pricing is staying pretty stable at the time being.
Yeah.
Cap rates aren't seeing any growth or depression. We're staying pretty stable on cap rates based upon today's performance. Something that I say and I feel is back in 2015-16, we had the presidential... We don't know who our president was going to be, let's be frank.
Uncertainty.
And we saw a little bit of a slowdown or a lull with regards to the portfolio sales.
Right.
And that caused a little bit of pause, which usually leads to concern based upon we still have scars from 2008, 9, 10, et cetera.
Yeah.
If you would have asked me in 16, I would have thought 2018, towards the end of the year, we would start to see plateau and then see a little bit of a dip in terms of values and an increase in cap rates. Looking at the performance today and just seeing that we're still tracking at 3% approximately ADR and RevPAR growth, and we actually saw increases in what I call the minds, the analysts and those groups are saying, they've actually increased their expectations for RevPAR growth. I think that we're going to see pricing stay fairly stable at this level. 2018 and 2019, et cetera. I think the problem is that there's an abundance of buyers, whether it's overseas, sovereign wealth funds, REITs, private
first-time
equity.
First-time buyers,
There are a lot of buyers. The problem is supply and supply that we can actually trade on.
Mm.
So I think the market is still ripe for acquisitions. I still think that there's a lot of meat left on the bone for the next few years, as even if someone were to acquire a hotel today, I still think that they have opportunity moving forward.
Include that evaluation, including the fact that there's a whole bunch of rooms and a whole bunch of properties that are coming online that are sort of in production now, right?
I think that question, and as you stated, it's obviously like everything in our industry, it certainly is market specific.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are certain areas of California that are going to see an incredible increase in supply.
Yeah.
Whether it's Los Angeles downtown with all we're seeing down there, whether it's the Sacramento area that's going to see a lot of new rooms come into the market. But I think if you dig deeper into those specific markets and we do our due diligence versus just closing our eyes and saying, let's go, there is still healthy demand in a lot of those markets. And these are markets that haven't seen an increase in supply.
And that's why
in 10 years, right. In some cases.
Yeah, in 10 years. Yeah. There's the other side of the equation sometimes that if they build it, they have to, they being the new coming assets, they need to get a certain rate in order for that investment to be palatable.
Right.
So hopefully that'll help the entire market.
I agree with what you're saying, but there's also a couple of other things coming into play. Let's look at Holiday Inn and their Blue program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's now every 10 years. So everything that was done with Holiday Inn Express, 08, 09, 010. These guys are all behind the eight ball. You look at 20-year-old Hampton Inn and Suites, mm-hmm. where now they don't have protected areas,
mm-hmm.
okay? And you've literally got a brand new, shiny Hampton Inn Express opening up within a mile or less of the existing one.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Your evaluations have got to be blended at this point when you're looking at taking something to the market. You've got to look at the age of the hotel, the transfer PIP, if there was already a PIP in play that has not been completed. Mm-hmm. How are you working up your pricing, and are you retrading, representing buyers to the sellers, and how are you justifying things as when you're representing the sellers?
I think retrading is a word that I equate to stealing. And I think that's how sellers perceive it as such. So I tend to stay away from that word. Yeah, I try to stay more focused on the opportunity is what it is. Yeah. The seller wants to leave with a number that makes them feel whole. And the buyer needs to walk in with the opportunity for that asset to succeed. Now, that's how I perceive it. When we're evaluating hotels and we're taking hotels to market, we genuinely are a listing house. Mm-hmm. However, we want to believe in the hotels that we list for sale. And we want to know that we can get those assets traded, whether it's making sure that our seller is on the same page with valuations. Right. And the buyers we bring in, most importantly to the seller, are real, are going to close. We're not going to waste time. Mm-hmm. And that trickles down to the staffing. We really try to make sure that the staff are not intricately involved in understanding of the sales process until we feel we have the right buyer on the hook. Even if they're all going to stay, generally can have a negative impact. Yeah. So when it comes to evaluating hotels, there's two fronts. One, we obviously have to look at new supply. We have to look at the age of the asset that we are focused on, the brand that it is, how long that brand is expected to stay on the hotel upon sale, whether it be 10 years or 15 years. Mm-hmm. In this case, we're referring to a Hampton or Express. Then I always recommend to my clients that are coming to us to sell hotels that they have or that we order a change of ownership PIP. And that's very important, a change of ownership property improvement plan versus an existing owner property improvement plan. Mm-hmm. And then we underwrite it.
Big difference between the two.
Huge difference.
Well, let's take a minute for people who are listening who don't know what that is. Could you just give people a differentiator, Danny?
Yeah, of course. So let's just use Holiday Inn Express as an example. You're welcome for the plug. They have a...
Great product, by the way.
Yeah, it's good. Good job, ladies and gentlemen. You have what's called the Formula Blue renovation for the Holiday Inn Express prototype. And then for the full service prototype, I believe it's called H4.
Four, yeah.
And it's a pretty comprehensive renovation plan for the hotels. Right. It's pretty extensive. And what I'm seeing now is that they want the hotels renovated every 5 to 7 years.
Right.
So this is a renovation mandated by the franchise or the brand that... Depending on the hotel, depending on the condition, it can cost anywhere between $15,000 and $25,000 a key for a change of ownership PIP.
Right.
Now we all know where those dollars come from. They either come from the loan or they come from the buyer, and that has to be built into the deal. Even as we're seeing recently, if the renovations are pushed back 3 or 4 years,
right,
but it's still on the property improvement plan, which is the document, mm-hmm, I call it the renovation Bible, if you will.
Right.
The lenders, in my experience, at least recently, they're looking at those numbers. And even if those numbers, renovation dollars, are pushed back to 24, which is 5-6 years away, a lot of lenders want to make sure that those dollars are in escrow or they're available.
They're accounted for
the renovation.
They're in reserves. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that affects the pricing. So when you have a seller of a hotel that maybe needs a $20,000 room renovation, let's just say a 100-room hotel. The seller is, in their mind, selling the hotel, making numbers up at a 9.2 cap. But the buyer's all-in number is going to be somewhere in the low to mid-sevens.
Right.
And that's hard for them on the seller side to swallow. So it's important to have those conversations early and often. To make sure that we're all on the same page. Because the worst thing is to find a buyer. Right. Everyone's in love with the hotel. Seller's excited. They're looking for an exchange, but they don't have a PIP. They're giving us an estimate of the PIP. We're giving them our thoughts with regards to knowledge of past experience. And then the PIP comes back, and it's twice as much as you expected.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard delta to swallow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially you looking at, fire life safety, Wi-Fi and data, okay, Formula Blue. Those all add up real quickly. And, let's... Say, God forbid, there's something wrong with the elevators. Okay. That could be another $100,000 in the blink of an eye.
Very easy. So. Very easy.
There's nothing worse than putting good money into a good hotel that's not going to provide an increase in good money back to you.
There you go.
Non-value add renovations.
Well, and we say this on the show all the time, Danny. It's like, that's where dealing with credible, experienced, even market-specific knowledge base, consultants and people that are providing you services is super critical because you could easily find yourself in the hole, like majorly.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Very fast.
We keep coming up with that every single time we have somebody of your caliber on here. We remind people, You know, not you pay for what you get what you pay for, really, and you got to make sure that the people that are helping you know exactly what the heck they're doing, because especially in a busy market, everybody's out there telling you they can do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you've got it, you know, Danny's obviously got, you know, hospitality in his DNA.
Just I like was waiting for it. Okay, Paul, okay. Paul he got his DNA, hospitality DNA out of his
Every
system.
Every episode, I work that out.
We can go to a break now and come
so,
back.
So, yeah, we're going to a break now, and when we come back in about
Are you feeling better
minute,
now? Are
we will have Danny Gewurz with
okay,
us.
Okay, all right. Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
Welcome back. This is Check Out California. I'm Craig Sullivan.
And I'm not. No, I'm
not. He's Brad Dantos. And our special guest today is Mr. Danny Gewurz, Senior Vice President, Hunter Hotel Advisors. And you manage their West Coast office. You set it up. You gave birth to this. Your wife is still talking to you. You've got two beautiful children.
So that's a lot of accomplishments.
A very
right there.
Productive office.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, we were talking about the importance of really qualified consultants and people to help you through the process, because especially in a busy market, you know, and Paul just handed us an article, a friend of ours from Atlas Hospitality, Alan Ray, wasn't it? Right,
yeah.
A write-up in the newspaper.
Every
time, everywhere you turn these days, you know, hot market, hotter than hot, hospitality, you know, da-da-da. Well, here's the thing. All kinds of unqualified people come up in a hot market, mm-hmm. and they're all promising you the moon, the stars, and everything in between, and you need to make sure you're dealing with the right people.
Follow the money.
You get what you pay for, and make sure that you have people that have real expertise, local market expertise, mm-hmm. you know, specific to those areas, because it varies. Even in California, we've said this multiple times, San Francisco market, different Santa Barbara. You know,
yep. San Diego,
Riverside. I mean, you know, and there's stuff going on all over the place. One thing you did touch on, Danny, that I'm just going to go back a little bit, because I'm always concerned. Like, we have so much inventory coming online. You know, prior to design, I am a economist major, mm-hmm. and I always talk about supply and demand. And I always worry about when I see a gluttony of supply coming into the market. You know, we kind of, you know, I can say this on this station because we're not on the air. Right. So, you know, we screwed ourselves in the real estate market in 1991. Mm-hmm. Right. And we were fortunate that we were at the end of the cycle for as far as the nationwide cycle in California. But we did too much inventory. Mm-hmm. And we, I think, in the real estate market side of it, the residential market and development side, learned that. And we have kind of avoided excess inventory. Right. And you were talking about this. And we said, you know, depending on the market, like Los Angeles or something, that's there's a lot of demand that hasn't been addressed. So a larger inventory of rooms and properties coming online is not necessarily worrisome. But you also said that we have this built-in thing right now from 2008. We still have a memory mm-hmm. of what happened, right?
Not for long.
And that's where I was going with this, is we right now still have a little sting. If you're still remembering that, you know, it got pretty bad in 2008.
Yeah.
How long do you think we'll hold on to that? Are we likely to kind of do what normal human beings do and forget about it at
yes.
some point?
Question
is not for you.
Well,
but you can take it if you like.
I don't necessarily disagree with Craig, but I think that we have to have, I remember what happened in the Phoenixes, Texarkana, Fort Myers. I can
Sacramento.
Go across the country.
Oh, horrible.
Sacramento.
Right.
There are a lot of areas yeah. across the country because I am a numbers dork as well. I enjoy studying history and seeing how that can predict the future. And all we do is sell hospitality assets. I don't sell anything else. I don't look at anything else with the same love. I certainly think that there's concern about that, but every market has its own litmus test to determine that. And I think that there are some markets that are going to certainly get affected by it. I mean, if you have a lot of units coming in, there's no way that you can say we're going to increase supply by 20%, let's just say over 3 years, but our demand is only increasing by 2 or 3% annually. We have to work on that. How are we going to fix that?
Well, in the nature of the units themselves, the nature of the property is what you're really bringing into the market and whether that really addresses the demand specific to that market. I mean, absolutely. Anything that you're seeing, I'm sorry, Greg, I'm just really curious from Danny's perspective is, you know, you've been doing this a long time, and specific to our market here, are you seeing any trends that are different? Are you seeing things that, you know, I know we did a lot of adaptive reuse, right? There's a lot of buildings that are, you know, existing downtown areas that are adaptive reuse. I was just talking to somebody in Long Beach. They got a property there that's an office building that they're basically looking to putting in a Kempton, I think, in there. And are you seeing anything that's interesting that that you're kind of excited about relevant to that?
I don't know if it's exciting. I can tell you that I think some of the projects that we see, whether we study the data, whether it's lodging dynamics, whatever it may be, that are not going to get built.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at how many units are potentially in planning, we can go through the list. It's a little daunting. However, I think the construction costs have gone up dramatically over the last 18 months, and specifically in the last 6 to 8 months, we've seen
probably
25%.
Set,
20 to 25%. And these are non-tangible items that we can't really, it is what it is. The cost is going to be this now, whether it's rising GC costs or tariffs that we're all concerned about.
And that wasn't in anybody's vocabulary 6 months ago. So now you look at steel, you look at aluminum, you look at wood.
Yep.
Okay, you've got to have, you know, a plan for tariffs as well. So,
and the lenders are concerned about that too.
Very much so.
I think that there are a lot of projects that people want to get off the ground, but those projects are going to take years, even if they do get off the ground. And the cost of those projects, it's a moving target every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something,
that uncertainty again.
And that's from a cost perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's not something I feel lenders want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And
when
it's a cost continues to rise, it hits a point where it doesn't make financial sense to build. The math doesn't work. So we go to hold.
See, that's a big chunk of it. I mean, you look, the big difference that I'm seeing between now and when we had the meltdown are a couple of things. We had full service hotels and resorts that were leading the way in construction.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that this time around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And both of you have heard me say this in the past. Look at Terranea, okay? That is the last resort. I'm never going to see another one like that built, certainly not in California, but most likely the continental United States, okay? 2 days ago, I did a posting. We've got the first $1 billion piece of property coming up for sale in Beverly Hills, on top of the hill. You know, and I still think that's where they shot part of Against All Odds, okay? Merv Griffin and various other people have owned that site. There's less than 100 people that can afford to buy that site, okay? And it's been marred in trying to get it developed.
Yep.
Yeah, it's got water, and it's got power, and it's got a beautiful lawn.
Mm-hmm. That's a great lawn, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a
beautiful lawn. Yeah, you see it when you're flying out of LAX. You can see it, you know, you're in one of the other houses in the hood looking that direction. You know, it took, 20 years to get the Getty built, okay? You know, this thing's going to come on the market, and I don't care if it's a residence or if it's a golf course or a golf course and a hotel and a convention center. You're looking at least another 20 years in development.
Before it gets entitled.
Before it gets entitled, and then probably another 10 years worth of lawsuits.
Yep.
So, you know.
Who has the appetite for that, really, right?
We're five
less than 100 people on the planet. So.
Right.
Certain assets in California to get built can take 5 to 8 years. And then how can you predict?
Terranea took 20.
Well, it's full service, beautiful baby. More your standard
Montage,
run-of-the-mill.
Same thing, 20 years. You're looking at select service.
But I think
right
the industry itself is different. I think the industry itself is different. The appetite for stuff like that is a bit different. You know, I mean, when Ternea went in, when you know, down south, when, you know, old St. Regis property, now Monarch Beach down there, I mean, the properties of that scale, just the mindset and what was the energy behind it was different. I think the industry is a lot more fine-tuned.
That's a sexy asset. I mean, it was a big play. I mean, that's what I call it.
Absolutely was. It was a huge play.
And to your point, it was like 100 people that would basically have the appetite to pursue something.
To do that. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, last cycle, you saw a lot of the full service owners referring to Select Service as ankle biters. Okay? And it's amazing how many people have gone, no, we want to do Select Service now.
Yep.
You look at what Hilton, Hyatt, Marriott, IHG have all done, Choice Hotels, Wyndham Hotels. There is an asset class out there for everybody.
Yep.
And it's viable. And, you know,
and some sort of brand for everybody.
Yeah, there is.
Times two.
Exactly. You go to the city of Burbank, okay? You tell them you want to build a hotel, they're all over it. But the first thing coming out of their mouth is, we want a full service, big fat full service hotel. Mm-hmm. Not going to happen.
No
okay?
way.
We're going to do a Hyatt House. We're going to do a Courtyard. We're going to do a Hampton, a Hilton Garden, any number of other Select Service. But something that you and I were touching on at lunch today is the boutique lifestyle soft brand.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, that is sexy right now. That is fun.
Yeah.
And they're at a price point and a demographic that is really a lot of fun as well. Let's hear some.
Well, it's a different scale of business too, right? I mean, it's an attractive on multiple levels. Like we were saying a minute ago about properties that, you know, at one point, oh, they're not big enough. It doesn't have all technology in it, you know, so it just goes into disrepair and just sits on the sidelines while everything else basically gets attention. Mm-hmm. And then roll down another 10 years and you go, well, hold on a second. I mean, you could argue that downtown LA is kind of like that.
On a
massive scale.
On a massive scale. Yeah. I think if you look, I always like to look back. If someone were to ask me this question, like, let's just say the question is, what type of hotel properties do you like the most?
Yeah.
Like, what would you like the most, Danny? And why? So a year ago, I would have said Select Service, which is obviously Hamptons, Residence Inns, Homewoods, Home Twos, Elements, et cetera. And there's a lot of reasons depending on the market. A lot of those properties can provide a healthier NOI margin. So you can bring more dollars to the bottom line. You have less employees in some instances.
Right.
Today, I love those brands because they're just old faithful. I mean, if you can get the right brand in the right
like
market.
The blue stocks.
You're good. But if there's an urban location or a location that can provide a higher rev par, higher ADR, the right type of customer, I've been really impressed with a lot of the soft brands recently.
Bingo.
I enjoy watching those brands blossom. I've traveled across the country, and I make a point to try and stay in them. And one of my favorites right now is the AC brand. Mm-hmm. And the reasons why I like these soft brands is because for some of them, you're still connected. You're still pregnant with the Grand Puba, whether it's Hilton or Marriott.
You're
still attached to their system.
You still have this infrastructure.
Reward points.
You still have everything like that. But the thing that I like is that you don't have a rate barrier. If you're in a downtown or a boutique or an urban location and you provide an experience, although that experience may not be to the consumer's eyes, it may not be very labor intensive, but it provides an experience, whether it's a cool bar where they can make you a sexy drink, and people like that and they'll pay more for it. The experience is driving rate, and you're not burdened by, well, it's a Courtyard, I can't spend that for a Courtyard. Mm-hmm. This isn't a Courtyard.
Right.
Making names up, it's an AC and that's a cool bar, and I have a good vibe here. I'd rather spend $50 more and stay there. I like that. And there's more flexibility from a development and a renovation standpoint for the franchisee, where he can go in there and make it his own, or he can make it.
There might even be incentivization from the local government, I mean, or the municipality in terms of revitalizing a particular area. I mean, those things could end up being a catalyst for rejuvenation of a particular downtown area. It's happening all around. Yep. I mean, Long Beach is another one. You know, the art district on First Street and Linden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's literally like a block away from the convention center. And all those single-story buildings, you know, that date probably back to the 40s and the 60s, and they're all basically being repositioned. And you can totally see how that, in conjunction with an overall business-to-business improvement and motivation plan for everything around it, is benefited to everybody. The right. Best Western on the street, the new hotel may be coming in. The Breakers just got, changed hands.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's going back to being a hotel.
Back to being a hotel. It's a very interesting time, especially in these sort of established areas.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, as well, as if it's presented correctly to the cities and the counties, is that you are giving them what they want, as you said earlier, Craig. You're giving them, in a sense, what I call a full service light.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not just slapping a franchise on the corner. You're providing a name that is not just a courtyard, in a sense, using that as the example. It has more appeal and allure.
It's an attraction to the city. It's it's that second or third bedroom in some cases.
It's funny.
Family members staying there versus at your house.
Mm-hmm. But it's all experiential, right? So it's all experiential, regardless of what level the property is, regardless whether it's a select service or not. There's an element of expectation for experiential.
Definitely.
These days, right? Yeah. Whether it's retail, whether it's hospitality. So here's the interesting thing: if you look back
a spa.
Or for spa. I mean, you could really do, I'm not even going to talk about who, but you can do a really bad job at putting in a spa in a new property. Okay.
Like a oceanfront resort that has a spa that looks like it's out of the desert?
No, it's a lot closer to where we're sitting right now. And it's a very puny offering for a new property, and it's already on Groupons, and I'm not going to say who it is.
Do they need a broker?
For the spa?
I thought it was a hotel.
No, hotel's doing okay, but it's like one of those things where it's
spa
like we just want to say that we have a spa, but yet it's not programmed for everything that is needed, and therefore not only is it a watered down, light version of something, but it's also a revenue suck. Sucks the revenue out of that real estate that could have been utilized for something else, right? But just to be able to say, hold on a second. Yeah, we're and we have a spa.
But that's exactly why
we have a restaurant. Like remember the days when you'd have a food and beverage, but you really didn't have a food and beverage.
But that's why
it was a barbecue, a burger.
I like the boutique or the soft brands, because if you don't have big business for breakfast or for lunch, you don't have to have it open. You can have a grab and go.
Right.
Or if you don't have big business for dinner, you may just have a very nice bar. I'm not telling each brand to specific to the requirements, but you have more flexibility, which helps on labor.
Well, and
that's a big cost right now.
Where I was going with this is, if you look thing back, go back to a locale, a zone, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
You may be the person with the bed and breakfast, or the pension, or the building on the corner of the street that has about maybe 20 rooms in it or something like that. But you have a business relationship with the corner bar that is the hip place to go, mm-hmm. and then the little Luigi's restaurant down the street that makes the best thin crust pizza after hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of those entities are actually cross-marketing their services.
Exactly.
Right? And that now has become an experience that is outside four walls and a ceiling, and has become actually a neighborhood experience, and take that and multiply it. And what's interesting with hospitality for me, from a design and just an oversight looking at it, is that we seem to be a little bit more open to not having everything housed after I go on a private driveway to a circular drop-off valet, and everything is housed inside an air-conditioned environment,
mm-hmm.
and I want to keep you on property all day long,
yeah.
that I actually understand that if I provide you an experience that goes beyond my walls, you actually are going to hold me in favor and come back.
Yes. Right. Yeah. You're not.
But that requires a little bit more vision. And to your point, when you're looking at those soft brands, you're looking at those little boutique, upstarts, if you will, that are looking. What was it? The motique concept, but an outside corridor. I mean, 2 years ago, you would have laughed at us for us saying that.
Yeah, but no, I like that. And the other part that comes into play is the cooperation in the neighborhood.
Well, if everybody's vested in the success of everybody.
Exactly.
Nobody's. And it's not all about me, like you were saying earlier.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're full-service hotels separate you from your money from the moment you get out of your car till the moment you get back in your car.
Well, we laugh about this with Orange County all the time, right? That basically, if you look around, there's nothing that markets Orange County. Because if I am in that industry, we're not going to share that just yet, right? But I want to get you out of the plane, put you on a shuttle, get you to property,
mm-hmm.
And not let you out.
And then never have you leave and go to somewhere else.
Yeah.
And sadly, that kind of isolationist attitude, you're losing out on opportunities to actually be more of value to that guest.
Well, yeah. I mean, that and the surrounding neighborhood.
I'm going to get you on a bus. I'm going to take you down to San Diego because there's, there's an awesome guitarist that's going to play on a venue that's by the beach. Or Doheny is having a blues festival.
Right.
And I'm going to basically have that as part of my offering. I mean, it's really funny because, okay, great, I'm on the property. Okay, I hung out at the pool.
Okay.
Okay, I had a bar.
Let's ask you about a property. It recently opened. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I see that you hang there quite a bit.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
My neighbor built it.
Yeah.
Oh, I know the property.
What do you think about Lido House?
Yeah.
Like every property, it hit certain marks and it missed others.
Really?
Yeah.
See, now, I think
I don't want to be specific about it, but I have very specific thoughts on
But I think it hit a lot more than a lot of other people in town.
There was, you know, here's what happens. You can never do enough advanced market analysis.
Seat.
No. You didn't put me on the hot seat. I could totally talk about this. There were things that could have been done better because I don't think it really took in the neighborhood. It was exactly what we're talking about. I'm going to get you on property, and you're going to spend all the stuff on time on property. Well, the minute you forgot to look around you about what your competition within a 30-mile radius is in terms of services and amenities you're providing in that property, you allocated real estate to things that we were never going to generate enough money at, given the neighborhood and the nature of the people that live in that neighborhood.
Interesting.
They have established relationship with service providers that you are never going to get them to detach from to come in and do service at your property, especially the way you were offering it.
Well, I got to tell you this.
But
everybody over at Lido House.
But I love the location.
I've got Jackie Collins from AJ Gallagher checking in this weekend. Her and her daughter are going to be staying there, and I know they're going to love
that. Well, here's the other thing, too, and I think that this is relevant to the hospitality industry, but any industry that's smart, right? Any property that's smart. Is you open yourself up to input.
Yeah.
And you're going to get it anyway,
whether you like it
or not these days because of Yelp and all that stuff. But you have a choice. Do you actually listen to what people are saying and basically factor in whether you like it or not and modify whether you like it or not, or you don't? And if you don't,
You deal with it as is.
If you do, then you're likely to actually make a better mousetrap and make a better box for people to stay in. I just think I for one, when I go to travel, I don't travel anymore to where I'm going to just basically be trapped inside that box and do everything. I want somebody that's going to encourage me to basically explore, and that's just the way I travel. That doesn't mean that's everybody.
Yeah, you know, that's the difference between being a traveler and an explorer. I mean, you've got a curiosity where you want to be out, whether it's London at 2 a.m. coming out of Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club or going into a museum at 7 a.m.
I was at the Ritz-Carlton in Sarasota, and I wanted to go to the Gator Club down in downtown Sarasota and only to find out that there was nothing going on that night, but I did like their sign. I went across the street and had a nice little pizza. And so all of that integrated experience for me was part of my visit to Sarasota.
Yeah.
I just like the way an explorer sounds versus a traveler. Next time I go on my trips, whether it's Texarkana or Winnemucca or God knows where, I'm going to change it to I'm exploring versus traveling.
Okay, so I will share this with you because we do kind of touch on travel here, right? So when I went to Spain, we do that. Okay,
All right. That's it.
So I'm not off topic.
No.
All right. Okay, when I went to Spain, we actually got a couple of books by this guy that wrote, I think it's, I might get it wrong, Rick Steed, I think is the guy's name.
Rick Steed. PBS.
PBS. I've traveled with my folks from when I was very young. I have pictures of me basically probably, using the grass at Edinburgh Castle as a child, where the ways I shouldn't have been using it, right? But, I'll leave you with that image, right? But I've traveled for a long time.
I'm just glad he wasn't an adult.
And he's giving us crap for me grabbing onto his belt buckle and walking.
Let's just say there were no bagpipes involved, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't festival time either, right? So I've traveled quite a bit. And I will
Too
tell
funny.
You, the thing that attracted me, yes, it was Barcelona and Sevilla and all this stuff, but the thing that attracted me was his approach to what he suggests to you, which is that if you travel, instead of having a to-do list of every crossing everything off your list, I'm going to see this, go there with the understanding that you will come back.
Right.
And that
Don't
made
try
a whole lot of difference.
It's not
so you, I explored.
Yeah.
I didn't travel with a to-do list. I explored. I allowed myself to meander down that little street when there was a siesta going on and realizing that now I'm in a country that basically is asleep for the next 2 hours, right? Taking time off and finding a little shade and sitting down and making sure I have a book with me because I'm going to basically hang out and not have any stores that I can walk into, no tourist traps that I could walk into. Exploring is great.
Yeah.
But we need to encourage people to do that in hospitality.
And you know
what? I agree.
You need to do that. Not only locally, nationally, but internationally. when I started going to London, I went to London probably 5 years in a row.
Yeah.
Okay. Just because the first time I was there, I saw it and I was in awe. I'm walking down streets that date back to medieval times. I'm seeing plates, white porcelain plates in buildings that state that Winston Churchill lived here between these years, Florence Nightingale, all this. I said, okay, I'm never going to take this all in on one trip.
No, there's no way.
I love history. Okay. So America's Lodging Investment Conference, ALIS, okay? The day that it ended, I would go from wherever it was, either San Diego or Los Angeles, and I would jump on a plane, go to New York, jump on another plane, and go into London, or I would go into Ireland when I got done with London. And I did this for a number of years. Still had all my clothes for the conference, got those cleaned while I was there, bought new clothes, and it was great. In January, the pricing was right, the crowds were gone, the weather was perfect
still
for
good.
Me.
Yeah, still good.
So, you know, it was a great time. And I think that's...
So you've been to London 5 times?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you been to Portobello Road?
No.
Have you been to Little Venice?
Little Venice? No.
Okay. See?
No.
So,
there's
so,
still more
no,
to say.
No, exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, who tells you that there's a little canal system, steps away from Abbey Road and the Beatles studio, right? That you can basically hang out on a little river barge and basically have breakfast in the morning, right?
Yeah.
Or go to a really amazing swap meet, you know, antique store in Portobello Road every Sunday, right? While you're half asleep drinking your coffee, right? Yeah, and you're absolutely right. But those are the kind of things that is nice because I have no idea what I'm going to experience.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, okay, let's say you're...
I don't need a curated existence.
No.
I don't need an 8x10 glossy.
No.
Let me get out of the property and explore your neighborhood. And if you're smart, you tie in with those people because they'll be vested in your success and you in theirs.
Amen.
Absolutely.
I agree.
So, Danny, let's get back to California. Let's get back to hospitality here.
I was kind of doing fun in London.
Yeah, London's a lot of fun.
I spent 6 months there in college. I lived there for 6 months on Princess Gate. That's
nice.
A great city.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it.
Very cool.
What college did you go to there?
It was part of Pepperdine's semester program.
It was
right next to Imperial College.
Oh, Imperial. Yeah,
so we were across the street.
Very
name
good.
Dropping all over the place, Dan.
You started it.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the increase in construction costs. How are you seeing those costs affect today's values for existing hotels on the market and or new building getting financed and completed today?
We kind of touched on it. I think you hit a point where
it
just...
I think you need to go a little bit more in depth because we're seeing a lot of construction loans, or at least hopefully.
Hopefully. You're going to hit a point where it just doesn't make financial sense to build. And even if the developer, you know, wants to push this heart project through, this love project... The lenders are going to hit a point where they're just going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, once one does it, is it going to be a trickle down like dominoes going down a stack of stairs? But you hit a point where it just costs too much to build a hotel in a particular market based on how that market is performing. You have to use the matrix that are provided, occupancy, ADR, star, et cetera.
The numbers don't lie.
And, you know, I see people that are potentially putting some development projects in certain areas on hold. And now they have to deploy that capital in other areas, so they're looking for acquisitions. So I think as we see development costs continue to rise, it's going to have a effect on the ability to get these projects developed. And I think that's going to be primarily focused on the financeability of those projects now and the faith that the lenders have in where construction costs are going to go and at what clip are they going to continue to increase or decrease. Mm-hmm. And what that does is that makes existing products that are either providing cash flow or recently opened, they're going to look more appealing because it's built, it's developed. You don't have to wait the time to get it in construction.
Right.
We don't know how many more years are left in this cycle. As I said earlier, as we do evaluations for clients across the country, whether it's Blackstone, Lightstone, Starwood, North Star, Apple, or a local owner that's out here that has 1 to 15 hotels, we think it's important to paint an accurate picture. And what we do is we'll put together our valuations that show a value based upon the performance of that hotel as of a trailing 12 revenue and NOI, a year-end 17 NOI. And then we also believe it's important to blend the last 3 years performance into one.
There you go.
And have those numbers dictate what the value is. We're not forensic accountants by no mean, but I think it's our job as we're doing evaluations to let sellers know, here's how buyers look at hotels. Here's what they look at to determine value. Here's concerns we have. Here's positives that you have. We can accentuate this. We can do this, et cetera. Right. So instead of just telling people what they want to hear, which is the easiest way.
It's also wrong.
It's wrong.
The professional thing is sometimes to tell them what they don't want to hear.
Exactly.
But they're better off for hearing it.
And sometimes they go another direction and they'll come back a year later and say, you know,
you were right.
You were right.
Thanks for telling me that. I didn't hear you then.
But, you know, that doesn't pay the bills, as they say.
Well, hopefully you have enough people saying coming back so that you constantly have people.
Yeah. Relationships are paramount.
It's all a relationship.
It always comes back around.
I'm curious, how much of your business you would recall or you would talk about as being repeat?
You know,
we never asked that question. I'm curious.
That's a good question. I'm very lucky to say that a lot of my business is repeat. I would probably say out of the 95 deals we've done since 11, that at least 50% of it is repeat. Now, what does that mean? Some of them are selling the same hotel.
Sure.
Some of them are selling, you know, I'll use an example. We're selling a Holiday Inn Express and Suites in Paso Robles right now. Great market. Love the market.
Yeah.
We sold the Spring Hill Suites for about $25 million in Atascadero late last year.
Nice.
I sold this Express to the existing client about 11 years ago. And they're interested in selling. So it's coming back to us to sell for about $19 million. Mm-hmm. That's repeat business. I mean, I've done deals for clients in other parts of the country that they don't know anyone out there. They're comfortable with what we provide and they want to use our platform. And so we'll do that. I mean, I sell hotels for clients in California and help them buy hotels in Colorado and vice versa.
Right. It's a trust relationship.
Yeah. So, you know, if you always chase the deal, you're just going to do a deal. If you chase the relationship and you're there
that's
for your clients,
hands down,
you're a part of the team.
Yeah.
And that's what I believe in.
Yeah. You and I have believed in that philosophy, you know, for as long as we've known one another.
If it's in your DNA, then that's just the way it is.
Hey, it's a copyright infringement. You owe me a check.
About a bottle of water. You want to settle for
we're
a bottle?
A little bit long. So, Paul was trying to give us the high five to wrap it up at 2, but we're going to go to about 2:15, and then we're going to have a big thank you to our sponsors and to Danny. So,
yeah, I wanted to ask that, Danny, because we really don't, and we've had a lot of people here, and it's all the assumption is like, you know, the business is so hot and the market is so hot that just the phone's ringing off the hook. And I wanted to reemphasize that it is very important about relationships, and that is your repeat business. I would venture a guess that if it's not repeat business, then it's referral business.
You know, we've been really blessed with that, but, you know, that's been great. But I would probably say some of our top clients right now, we're doing a bit for Starwood, a bit for Blackstone. We're doing a lot for other private equity institutional owners. But then you also, I call it the bucket method. I like to have all three of my buckets full.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have your escrows, you have your existing properties that you are trying to sell, and then you have future projects that you're doing evaluations for, you kind of have in the kicker. So, you know, for me, I just like to make sure that all my buckets are somewhat
full. Smart business.
And, you know, because we sold 4 hotels this month.
Yeah.
And
congratulations.
Thank you. So, two in Utah, one in Arizona, and one in California. And there's a lot of people out there that's like, we're done. Let's go home,
that's
take
the
a month
yeah.
off.
You and I both know people. That was their MO.
A lot. And as we're going through that, I hate to have that point when you say to yourself, what am I doing tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's a scary, daunting thought to have. So never getting above your skis, never feeling fat and happy, always continuing to push and keep all your buckets full is what I tell my team. The other thing I say is right now it's guys, let's store some nuts, as they say, as you're a squirrel. Let's put some nuts away for winter because we don't know what'll happen. Let's not be fat and happy cats.
Right.
Let's put some away because let's remember what happened back in 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah, right.
So don't get careless. Continue to push.
Absolutely. You've mentioned Blackstone a couple times. Now, there was a report out the other day that they need to deploy $1 billion or $2 by the end of the year, which is a dramatically short period of time. So I've got to imagine you, Hunter, and various other firms across the board are looking at potential M&A and real estate deals for them to acquire. And I've got to figure that everybody's showing them a portfolio. It's like, here's 200 hotels in the Southeast. It's, you know, $150 million. here is a 70-story office tower in Chicago that you can get for this. So how are you mobilizing? Are you guys chasing this? Are you trying to get into the into those negotiations as well, or that get in front of that development person? Or, you know, is that part of your programming, or are you just going, hey, I'm just going to work my regular contact over at Blackstone and go, hey, what do you have an appetite for now? I know there's more money on the table.
I think it's important to just be cautious, not cautious, but be aware of what they're doing. I mean, Starwood and Blackstone are going to be looking to put out an immense amount of money. And I think that that's going to be put out in portfolio acquisitions. I think it's going to be put out with, let's just make numbers up, like Starwood could buy a large hotel in the Hawaiian Islands. Blackstone could do a large $1 billion acquisition on the Hawaiian Islands. And I think you're going to see a blend. I don't think you're going to see them go away from what would be considered, whether it's BRE Select on their Select Service platform or Blackstone as they, you know, just swallow the world. They're going to still be methodical in what they pick. However, as brokers or sellers, it's very important for us to make sure that we put together the right package of hotels. Right. Don't just show them something because someone called you and said, I want to sell 10 hotels.
Right.
Call them and have your approach ready. You know what they want. Structure it accordingly and see if it sticks.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a singles and doubles guy. I represent sellers. I sell their hotels. I don't say that we spend a lot of our time with buyer leads and chasing down potential opportunities, because that model, in my experience,
it's not your model.
It's not my model. And as I jokingly say, and a lot of people say, we follow the KISS model. Keep it simple, stupid.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, if we have...
There's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
Know your strengths, know your weaknesses.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, we're certainly, of course, we're looking for those opportunities. But in this day and age, the Blackstones, the Starwoods, whomever it may be, they all know each other. They all talk. And it's very simple now to find an email address for the right person and say, I own 8 hotels. I'm looking to sell them. What do you think? And, you know, we're out. So, I mean, we help a lot of the big boys with the evaluation and the analysis of their portfolios that they're looking to sell. There's a lot of times when they say thank you and they sell it internally, or they go buy something that they asked us to look at and we are just doing them a favor. But yeah, there are going to be portfolio sales this year. You're going to see a substantial amount of them continuing. There have already been a number, and there'll continue to be more.
I think, you know, it almost reminds me right now of pre-financial meltdown. You know, the deals that you did early on in the year were one thing, okay? And then you got through summer and you're going, okay, I've had a really, really good year. Now, how can I add to this? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I would get a call from Westmont Hospitality or Tersady or somebody else, and they're looking at 4 or 5 hotels or Westmont in one case. They gave me a call and they were looking at literally 120 hotel portfolio in the Southeast, and they were going to buy it. Mm-hmm. I went, great. Mm-hmm. $750 million. Love it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know, so you know, you've got that end of the year push, and we haven't really seen that in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen that 1031 exchange and, you know, M&A and portfolios all hitting at once at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, everybody kind of, you know, hey, we're gonna do the circuit and say hi to our clients and thank you. But I have a feeling you've got a tsunami coming towards the end of the year.
Well,
and you're going to see a lot of deals.
We've been on a cycle, at least like a 10-year cycle.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a part of it, I think, that's just human psychology, where you're like, there may be no signs at all, no tea leaves that say that there's something coming that's an issue, that's a problem, right? But your gut says, wait, hold on, it's been 10 years.
No, that's when you hear the word froth.
Right?
And that's frothing, when everything goes crazy.
And so there may be a little bit of holdback that's instinctively been happening a little bit this year that, to your point, Greg, will be released at the end of the year, to where you're basically, well, hold on a second. No, we're good. Let's just go. But I think, yeah, that you know, we sometimes underestimate human nature.
Well, absolutely, and I think it also
put all the numbers on the paper. It doesn't matter. It's still human nature factor.
I think you still got to look at it because where are we in the cycle? We just hit 100 month of positive performance at near historic records.
Yeah, but when do you stop talking about it as a cycle when it doesn't fit the numbers anymore? Right?
Yeah.
It's like it's not a cycle. It's an ellipse now.
Right?
It's elongated.
I mean, first time in nearly 20 years. Danny and I are not going to be at the same conference in September.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah,
sad.
He's got another assignment that he needs to take care of, and it's a very important one. We won't go into it on the air. But I'll be at the lodging conference. And I am really excited to hear what these panels have to say this year. I think that, you know, we are definitely in uncharted waters. And
I don't have the safety edge of the cycle to hold on to anymore.
Yeah, we don't have that anymore. And I think, you know, one of the major differences between Harry's lodging and investment conference and the Click conference is I'm just focused on California. Okay. It's pretty easy to talk about this state, and it's pretty
easy. Well, it's an odd duck that has its own dynamics, right?
And so, and does it affect the rest of the country? Absolutely. Does the rest of the country affect California? Absolutely. So, you know, once you've got those things dialed in and you see and you can reflect and you can talk about the statistics and get the numbers, I think it's great. And luckily for me, I'm only focused on one state. Now, with you and your firm being national, there are so many more dynamics that are affecting you. If something happens in the Southwest or the Northeast, it affects you. And it affects you all the way across the country. So, you know, it's okay, 100 months of positive performance. You know, where do we go from here? 101, 102?
You know, what's funny is the tone in our voice when we say that these days, right?
It's a little squeamish.
It's like, 100 months. Yeah. It's like, oof. You know, do we, you know, I mean, we've got some uncertainty in D.C. We've got some pullback with some travelers coming into this country.
Still seeing positive GDP.
Right.
Still seeing low unemployment.
Right. You know, we're still traveling. We've got these counterbalance things still going.
Yep.
But, you know, it's hard to determine. I mean, you know, I'm looking at a lot of positive, you know, reinforcement from AHOA and and our trade organizations and the great jobs that they do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but it's going to be interesting to see where at Logic.
The other part of uncharted territory, I think, relevant to this is, yes, we have increased GDP. Yes, we have low unemployment.
But
if you stop looking, if you stop at that level of
talking to the microphone
and you don't dig deeper, I think that's where we miss, because we are in uncharted territory. We are uncharted territory in terms of other dynamics, in terms of aging population, change of expenditure spending, wage levels. We've got other things going on as well that we may not be going to be impacted by today, but that could actually have a ripple effect going forward. So if we're looking at traditional milestones and benchmarks only, because that's what we have done forever, we actually may be missing a bigger story in how we evaluate and measure things.
Could be.
I also think that we can look at the numbers for anything and manipulate them in any way to tell us what we want to see. I mean, I think that's what's important as well. And I also feel that we're already past, as the joke was, you know, we're in the sixth inning of a doubleheader. Well, now we're in the second. Like, we've already gone through all of the difference.
Right.
I don't know what we're going to say next. Is it a World Series and we're in game 3 out of 7? But we've already extended it out past.
Well, there's a lot of people that make a living out of saying these things, right? So what are they going to say next? Otherwise, they have no reason for existence, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, Danny, we're going to wrap this up pretty soon, but I do want to ask you a couple more questions.
Yeah.
Who's buying and selling today? Is the remainder of 2018 and 2019 going to be a buyer or a seller's market?
I still think that this
is crystal ball.
Yeah, it's out. It's out. It's up here. I think we're looking at 2018 is going to continue to be a seller's market. I even think that 2019 will continue to be a seller's market. However, I do feel that there are opportunities that buyers can come in the right markets and the right assets and make money. And it'll be a profitable venture for them moving forward. But I think the amount of what I'd call historical steals, we haven't seen them for a while. Sometimes you get lucky, but there's an immense amount of risk associated with that, whether it's a conversion or whatever it may be. Yeah. And those buyers believe in themselves. They believe in their teams. They believe in the market. And they believe in the long-term value as it continues to flower. So I think it's still a seller's market, and I think it will stay one for a while, especially
in California.
At least
another year and a half.
We have buyers that are they're all over the place. Our hotel that we sold in California was off market. I made 2 phone calls. We sold it. They went non-refundable on day one, and they closed in 45 days.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they knew that there was two other people that were waiting to jump in behind them, and they are educated and seasoned enough that they know they needed to act and act quickly.
We can do it now, yeah.
So it's definitely still a seller's market.
That sounds like from that description.
Yeah.
Where are cap rates today, and where do you think they will be in the next 12 to, say, 14 months?
I think that cap rates are staying fairly flat at the moment. I mean, yeah. I don't believe that we're going to see cap rates from today moving forward, even going back 4, 5, 6 months. They've pretty much hummed along at the same pace, and I don't foresee that to stop anytime soon, unless, God forbid, something wild that we would unexpected
happen. Something we don't
want
to hear, yeah.
But I think based upon everything I see, cap rates are going to continue to stay at the existing level that they are, at least for the next 12 months, because we're continuing to see steady growth in ADR and RevPAR, and we have for so many years, which is another daunting fact. But you know, the numbers support the stability of the cap rates, not going up, not going down, just kind of staying where they are.
Well, Danny, we're at the end of the show.
Oh.
Thank you very much for coming down behind the orange curtain and joining us on Check Out California.
It wasn't too bad. He survived.
I'm still here.
Yes, still here. Still got to head home. Today's show was brought to you by Radgantos and Associates. Thank you very much. It was also brought to you by Park West General Contractors. Thank you, Ed La Civita and Chris Hostert and the rest of the team. Nancy Nguyen, you are the best admin ever, and thank you very much. We will probably have Mr. Mark LeBlanc here next month. For some reason, our engineer Paul declined. I don't know why, so we'll talk about that off air. But thank you all very much, and we will see you next time on Check Out California.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for being our guest today on Check Out California. We look forward to having you as a guest with us again in 2 weeks. Until then, you can always reach us through our Check Out California Facebook page or by emailing us at checkoutcalifornia@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. So do let us know what you think of the show and what areas of interest you'd like to see us cover in the future. Your feedback is very important to us as we continue to bring you the best hospitality our Golden State has to offer. Until next time, may all your days be filled with sunsets and palm trees. Now, go experience and check out California.